where Greenwich comes for news and talk. The Lisa Wexler Show, now on Southern Connecticut's news and information leader, WICC 600.
And welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. Valerie Seiling Jacobs is actually going to join us in the next hour to talk about quiet communities. But joining us right now is none other than Dr. Sylvia Earle, Dr. Deep herself, who was probably the foremost woman oceanographer in the world, and early in her career in the 70s was actually kept off of some of the great oceanographic expeditions. So she decided, the hell with you men, you don't want to let me on. I think I'll go by myself with some women and we'll do some exploring on our own. She is, she was the chief of NOAA for many years, and she is revered, really revered in the world of science and oceanography. And in honor of Earth Day, after all, what is Earth except land and oceans? We are so delighted that Dr. Sylvia Earle is joining us once more to talk about her latest book, Ocean, A Global Odyssey, which is one of these extraordinary coffee table books that you can just immerse yourself in forever. Dr. Earle, welcome back to the Lisa Wexler Show. What a privilege and honor.
Well, great to be on board.
Well, thank
and
you so
right.
much.
You know,
yes.
Earth Day should be Ocean Day.
It's certainly, what do we have, 70% of Earth is covered with water, right? 70%, isn't that right, of the Earth is covered with water?
And,
is that right?
And that's just the top of it. You know, most of Earth's water is ocean, like 97%. And that's where most of life on Earth actually lives. All life needs water. And oh, there's a lot of water elsewhere in the universe without life. This planet is blessed with an ocean, and that's where the great living space on Earth, not just the top, but average depth is about where the Titanic rests, about 2.5 miles beneath the surface, and it keeps going all the way down 7 miles to the deepest places on Earth, and it's all alive. It's like a living minestrone, but all the little pieces are or creatures, something alive in every drop.
You know, that's so interesting, Dr. Earle, because I want to ask you about that, because I've had Dr. Robert Ballard on once as well, and you've been on, and I'm interested in the fact that where there's no light left that reaches the water, how does life survive without the sunlight? In other words, in those depths, how does life survive at all without light?
Well, food generated by the green things, plants and photosynthetic bacteria and other creatures in the ocean, the phytoplankton, the greatest forests are the miniature ones out in the ocean. On the land, you know, we know about trees and ferns and grass and things, but there's photosynthetic organisms in the sea have dominated the planet since the beginning of photosynthesis, generating oxygen, capturing carbon dioxide, making food, and providing sustenance for life in the ocean that sort of rains down from the illuminated surface waters into the great depths below. But there's another mechanism, and certainly Bob Ballard knows about this. He was at a front row seat in a little submersible back in the late 70s to observe chemosynthesis in action in the dark in the Galapagos Islands, about 2.5 miles down where there is no sunlight. But organisms, bacteria, and a whole category of life that was not known to us before that time, the Archaea, another whole kingdom of life, capable of producing food in the dark. And we don't really have a measure of how important that is, but it's a complement to sunlight and photosynthesis in terms of processing elements into food.
So that's what it is. So other than photosynthesis, there's another way in the dark that these organisms have found to figure out a way to have food. I mean, it's just astonishing to me how little we really know about the underpinnings of our Earth. You know, we think we know everything. And,
right.
and people have their eyes on the stars all the time. You know, they have their eyes on inhabiting Mars and running to the moon. And there's so much about planet Earth that we don't know. And that we haven't, you know, frankly, that we haven't fixed.
In this book, Ocean, A Global Odyssey, I think the fun there was not only trying to assemble through the eyes of many explorers and scientists with their stories, but to just figure out not only what we know, but what don't we know? What are the great new frontiers of exploration? And why do we need to know? You know, and why do we need to know? Because our lives depend on maintaining Earth as a habitable planet in a universe that we know is not very friendly. The best chance we will ever have to safeguard civilization, everything we care about, is to make peace with this planet. We've really done terrible things to upend the very basic life support functions, like, you know, putting carbon dioxide and methane and into the atmosphere, warming the planet, changing the chemistry of the ocean. Ocean acidification is referred to as the terrible twin of climate change. But knowing that we have problems is the key to solving them. Imagine if we did not know. We'd continue to do the same things that have gotten us into this fix. But we're right at this wonderful point, 21st century human beings able to understand and make changes necessary to safeguard not just creatures in the sea and on the land share space with us on Earth, but basically we're saving ourselves.
We're chatting with her deepness herself, Dr. Sylvia Earle. And the latest book of hers, in many, many books she's written over the years, is called Ocean, A Global Odyssey, with the most extraordinary pictures and biographies that you've ever seen. Dr. Earle, you must be very focused, I would think, not just on grieving, and there must be a lot of grief for how you've seen our planet over your years and your career, but what are we going to do? What is going to be, do you think, the most efficient way to remove plastics from our ocean? What are we going to do?
Well, number one, don't let more flow into the sea. Stop it at the source and retrieve what we can. But it's a combination of what we're putting into the ocean and also what we're taking out. There is, I think, a very promising move by nations around the world. I think on the order of 70 nations have committed that by 2030 to safeguard at least 30% of the land and at least 30% of the ocean, including the high seas beyond national jurisdiction. There are deliberations underway right now about what can be done to create places where even the fish are safe. What a concept.
What a concept.
We've depleted so many. 90% of the sharks and tunas are in serious trouble because we've taken so much so fast. But if we provide safe havens, recovery, restoration, we know works. We've seen it happen where you stop killing things and really start caring. It can get better. There are more whales today than when I was a child, more sea turtles, because we've got to see them with new respect and care. And the benefits back to us are really clear in terms of capturing and holding and sequestering carbon dioxide, this theme of nature-based solutions to climate change and planetary disruption.
We're chatting with Dr. Sylvia Earle. Dr. Earle, one of the things you talk about in your book, you say 2030 is the tipping point. And you talk about visionaries Johan Rockström and Matthias Klum. Who are they?
Right. These are big thinkers who have spent their lives looking at the evidence and the patterns and continuing the trends we get to a very bad place. And they have analyzed data, and not just their own research, but gathering, as I have tried to do in this Ocean Odyssey book, to really look at the pieces of the puzzle that we could not see before, and to present it in a way to show that we're pushing the edge of where, how much we can disrupt the natural systems that have taken hundreds of millions, literally billions of years to put into place, that in just a few decades we have significantly disrupted and unraveled. And to look, what can we do to avoid tipping points where if we add enough CO2 and methane to the atmosphere, the runaway scenario where nothing we can do can possibly alter the outcome. But there's still time to reach turning points before we get to those dreaded tipping points. You know, it's true with species. You can get a number of individuals down to a level so low that the number of deaths every year exceed the number of births. And one example is the northern right whale that exists in the North Atlantic. Only, you know, it's about 300 individuals, sometimes in some years more, in some years it falls below. But they're right at the tipping point. It wouldn't take much in terms of a bad food year or disease or ship strikes or entanglement with lobster pots that kills some every year. But if they have a really bad year, it gets to the point of no return. You don't have enough resilience to recover. And magnify that with hundreds, thousands of species around the world that are right on the edge, that if climate becomes too warm, if the chemistry in the ocean becomes more acidic, and the trend is certainly clear, you know, you get to the point of no return. But we don't have to get there. We know what to do. And that the exciting thing, the promising thing, is that nations and individuals, it starts with every one of us can do something. No one can do it all. No nation can do it all. But everyone can do something that will help go from decline to recovery. And that's why I think this book, while it lays out some of the problems, it's more of a celebration of solutions and what needs to be done, and everybody can maybe find a place. They can pick up a piece of what is possible through their choices about what to eat, what to wear, how to travel or not, and put it to work. It's really, this is a moment in time that should make everyone excited to be around to make a difference.
You know, Dr. Earle, chatting with Her Deepness, Dr. Sylvia Earle, you know, one of the greatest living oceanographers on planet Earth and someone who has seen the ocean from so many different depths throughout her life. And you've tried and you have succeeded in being a warrior for the oceans and a trumpeter. But I have to say that I think I admire most your genuine optimism, because I'm not nearly as optimistic as you are. I get up in the morning and I read the newspapers and I think, well, you know what? We have an administration and a president that said that he was going to try and fight climate change. But now 2 years into his administration, or a year and a half, he's got a war in Ukraine and people are clamoring for cheaper gas at the pumps. So yesterday I saw that the Biden administration decided that another 100 or 200,000 acres of American public lands are going to be open towards oil and gas drilling, because there's a real and present need for Americans to be able to afford basic transportation to go about their lives. And that's one of the solutions the administration has come up with. And I just see, and we have, of course, Putin and the war that he has inflicted upon Ukraine and maybe beyond the boundaries of Ukraine, is going to have untold pollution and misery and destruction to people and animals and the planet, And I just think that we can't get out of our own way, Dr. Earl. It's like we take 2 steps forward and 3 steps back, or 1.5 steps forward and 10 steps back. To me, I'm very discouraged. Yeah. I love to hear your optimism. I think it's amazing. But honestly, I don't know. I don't know.
Well, it's easy to get discouraged. I feel there's a sense of despair as well. But if we really give up, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy, basically. If you think there's nothing you can do, then we will do nothing. But if you understand that we still have the best chance we will ever have, armed with knowledge that not only did not, but could not exist before, we have the best chance to move from decline to recovery. I mean, Okay. Never before could we know that our actions affect climate. Never before could we see the correlation between burning fossil fuels and a planet that is working inexorably in ways that do not favor our future. But we are not without means to every decision that we make. I mean, we can choose not to go down the track of increasing fossil fuel use. Those are individual decisions, not just large-scale government actions. And generally speaking, this country is moving in the right direction. We started with national parks going back to the early part of the 20th century and now scaling up commitments to protect land and sea. We're among the nations saying at least 30% should be safeguarded to restore health. And yeah, it's an ongoing struggle because, as you say, 1 step forward, 2 back, but we need to take those 2 steps forward while we understand that there are these other processes. But if we give up, if we stop trying, then we will we'll see the consequences of giving up. Just don't let that happen. There's so many reasons for hope. The fact that there are more whales today, there are more sea turtles, there are areas of recovery. When the killing stops and the caring really kicks in, and people in their own backyards are restoring health, making them more friendly to birds and bees and butterflies and all the creatures that safeguard the nature of the world. We can do
well. You know
part.
What, Dr. Earl? We're doing No Mo May for the second year in a row in my little 1 acre in Westport, Connecticut. I will not be mowing our lawn for an entire month so that the pollinators can have a really good time.
Yay.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean it.
Yes,
and my husband, by the end of that third week, he starts to utz. He wants to call the lawnmower. He can't stand the way the lawn looks. And I'm like, no, one more week. So, but that's what I'm doing. I want the bees to come. I want them to be, I have my dandelions out here. I do not have a desert lawn. I have a lawn full of clover and dandelions and all kind of stuff. So, but that's my only little 1 acre. That's
beautiful.
All I can do. Yeah, but that's it. It's not enough. It's a little bit.
One acre,
it's not enough.
One acre at a time.
Yeah, I know. Well, Dr. Earl, it's really very moving to hear you speak and to hear your optimism. And I will not give in to despair. I'm a natural optimist myself, I promise. And I'll help spread the word. The book is called Ocean, A Global Odyssey. You ought to get it. You ought to read it. I think, as Dr. Earl has basically said, the more you know, the more we know that we can connect with planet Earth and all the oceans and appreciate and love what is around us, what we inherited as human beings. We have to appreciate and love it. It's what we have to do. So,
right,
thank you, Dr. Earl.
Dive
thank
in.
You. And we'll dive in. That's right. Dr. Earl, you be well. God bless you. You be well. Thank you so much for coming back on the show.
All right.
We'll be right back with more of the Lisa Wexler Show coming up.